Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present Ghost Estate, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Grift. I've always been good at smelling desperation. It's a stink, really, like wet cigarettes and stale coffee. You learn to recognize it young when you grow up in a trailer park where everyone's got a sob story and a hand outstretched. My old man used to say, "People don't want the truth, kid. They want a lie that fits." He should know. He sold fake Rolexes out of the trunk of his 92 Camaro until the cops found him face down in a Denny's parking lot, 3 bullets in the back. Poetic fucking justice. That's how I got into real estate. Not the legit kind, with open houses and smiling couples clutching pre-approval letters. Nah. My game was simpler. Find the rotting houses, the ones sagging under foreclosure notices or inheritance feuds, and convince the owners they were sitting on a haunted gold mine. Then, like a vulture in a cheap suit, I'd swoop in with a lowball offer and a sympathetic smile. "I'll take this curse off your hands," I'd say. And they'd weep with gratitude as I signed their nightmare away. The Johnsons were my fourth mark. Sweet, gullible Karen and Dave, with their 2 kids and a mortgage they couldn't afford after Dave's back gave out at the warehouse. Their Victorian on Elm Street was a masterpiece of decay. Peeling paint, a porch slanted like a drunk's grin, and a basement that flooded every time it drizzled. But the real kicker? The attic. I'd scoped the place out weeks before, bribed a meth head electrician to rig the wiring so the lights flickered on command. Planted a Bluetooth speaker behind a loose vent, loaded it with a track of muffled sobs and floorboard creaks. Then I showed up at their door wearing my best concerned neighbor face. "Heard you've been having trouble here," I said, lowering my voice like I was sharing state secrets. Karen's eyes went wide. Bingo. By sunset, I was sitting on their moth-eaten couch, sipping burnt Folgers while Dave chain-smoked Parliaments. "It's my grandma," Karen whispered, clutching a photo of some withered crone in a rocking chair. "She's angry we tore down her rose bushes. The lights, the noises, it's her." I let the silence hang, thick and sour. Then, like I was doing them the biggest favor of my life. I've dealt with this before. Residual energy. Traumatic deaths leave stains. I pulled out my phone, showed them a photoshopped pic of a ghost I'd cleansed in Ohio. Dave's hands shook. Karen cried. 2 days later, I owned the house for 85 K F L I P P E D I T F O R. 85K. Flip edit for 240K after a fresh coat of paint and a bullshit backstory about positive spiritual renewal. The new buyers never even asked about the attic. But the Carmichael estate? That was different. I found the listing buried in a probate auction email. Gothic Revival Manor, 5 acres. Estate sale ASIS. The photo showed a monstrosity of gray stone and broken windows, half swallowed by ivy. The kind of place that looked like it ate landscapers for breakfast. The owner, Evelyn Carmichael, was a reedy widow who'd inherited it from her husband, some hedge fund ghoul who'd dropped dead at 52. Rumor was she'd refused to step foot in it since the funeral. Perfect. I drove out at dusk, the sky bruised purple, and parked at the edge of the overgrown driveway. The groundskeeper, a grizzled bastard named Mick, met me with a hand-rolled cig dangling from his lips. "Ain't been touched in years," he said, hacking a glob of phlegm into the weeds. "Place is bad news. You'll see." I slipped him a 50. "Tell me everything." He did. By the time he finished, I had the script. Lights in the upper windows at midnight. A woman's scream echoing from the chimney. Shadows that didn't match the furniture. Mick swore he'd seen them himself, but I knew the type, lonely half-drunk, eager to spin a ghost story for another 50. Still, I played along. Nodded. Took notes. "You ever go inside?" I asked. He paled. "Once." The floor moved. Like something was under it. Breathing. I laughed. "You're a poet, Mick." He didn't laugh back. The first red flag should have been the silence. No birds. No crickets. Just the crunch of gravel under my boots as I approached the house. The air smelled wrong too, metallic, like a butcher's sink after a long day. But I shrugged it off. Old pipes. Rust. The key Mick gave me stuck in the lock. When the door finally creaked open, the stench hit me like a fist. Rot. Mildew. And underneath it, something sweet. Cloying. Decay. Charming, I muttered, flicking on my flashlight. The foyer was a time capsule. Dusty chandeliers, moth-eaten drapes, a staircase spiraling into shadows. I'd planned to plant my usual tricks. Remote-controlled fog machines in the corners, a speaker under the floorboards preloaded with whispers. But as I walked, the floor groaned in a way that made my teeth ache. Too real. Then I saw the walls. At first, I thought it was water damage, streaks of black bleeding through the wallpaper. But when I reached out to touch it, the wall twitched. A ripple under the surface, like muscle flexing. What the foo? The door slammed behind me. Not a slam. A scream. Wood splintering, hinges shrieking. I spun, heart jackhammering, and clawed at the handle. Locked. Mick. I yelled, throat raw. This isn't funny, you old fuck. Something laughed. Not Mick. Not human. A wet, gurgling sound that oozed down the hallway. The flashlight flickered. Shadows lunged at the edges of the beam. Too fast, too alive. I ran. Or tried to. The hallway stretched, doors warping away from me like a funhouse mirror. The flashlight died. Darkness pressed in, hot and suffocating. Little faker. The voice came from everywhere. Nowhere. Inside my skull. You think you're clever? We'll show you clever. Then the walls split. Not cracks. Wounds. Gaping, jagged tears that oozed thick black sludge. It pooled on the floor, hissing as it ate through the wood. I backpedaled, slipped, landed hard on my ass. The sludge inched toward me, smoking. Fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuck. I scrambled up, boots sliding, and bolted for the stairs. The second floor was worse. Portraits hung crooked, their eyes gouged out. A nursery with a crib full of bones. And at the end of the hall, a door. Open it, something whispered. Open it and see. I don't know why I listened. Maybe because the sludge was still climbing the stairs. Maybe because the house wanted me to. The room was empty. Just a cracked mirror and a smell like burnt hair. Then the reflection moved. Not me. A thing with my face, but wrong. Lips peeled back from jagged teeth, eyes hollow and hungry. It pressed against the glass, fingers leaving smears of black. Mine, it rasped. I smashed the mirror with my flashlight. Glass rained down. The thing laughed. When I stumbled back outside, dawn was breaking. Mick's truck was gone. My hands wouldn't stop shaking. But here's the thing about grifters. We don't scare easy. Fear's a currency. A tool. And this house? It was a goddamn gold mine. I called Evelyn Carmichael that afternoon. Ma'am, I've assessed the property. I lied, voice steady. It's severe. But I'm willing to make an offer. Cash. As is. She hesitated. Is it her? Her. My husband's mistress. A brittle laugh. He didn't choke on that olive, you know. She's still in there. Hungry. The line went dead. I should have walked away. But the game's the game. And I never lose. Chapter 2. The House That Hungers. I've never believed in karma. Karma's for suckers who need to pretend the universe gives a shit about fairness. But standing in the Carmichael Estate's foyer for the second time, the stink of rot clawing at my throat, I wondered if maybe I'd pissed off something older than karma. Something hungry. Evelyn Carmichael signed the papers 3 days after my first visit. No haggling. No inspection. Just a trembling scribble on the dotted line and a whispered, "Don't let her out." I didn't ask who she was. Didn't care. The deed was mine, and with it, the kind of adrenaline rush that comes from knowing you've just conned a $1 million property for pennies. But as the moving truck rolled up the driveway, Mick was waiting. No wave. No smirk. Just him leaning against his rusted Ford, face gray as the house's stone walls. "Told you not to buy it," he said, grinding his cigarette under his boot. I tossed him another 50. "Stick around. I'll need help cleaning out the basement." He stared at the bill like it was a snake. "Ain't stepping foot in there again. You shouldn't either. What's your damage, Mick? You saw me plant the speakers in the Johnson place. This is the same gig." He looked past me, at the house's gaping windows. "You don't get it. That place, it ain't a place. It's alive. And it's been starved." I laughed. Loud. "The way you do when the dark feels too close." "Starved? You've been hitting the bourbon before noon again." He didn't laugh. just climbed into his truck and spat out the window as he peeled away. Don't say I didn't warn you, dumbass. The movers lasted 20 minutes. I'd hired a couple of college kids, all muscle and no brains, the kind who'd haul asbestos if you paid cash. They carried in my gear, fog machines, projectors, a duffel bag of Bluetooth speakers preloaded with screams and whispers. The plan was simple: stage a few hauntings, leak footage online, then flip the house as a paranormal hotspot to some rich idiot with a ghost hunting fetish. But the house had other plans. The first kid, a linebacker named Tyler, dropped a speaker in the foyer. "Yo, this floor's squishy," he said, toeing the wood. "Old houses settle," I said, not looking up from my phone. Then he screamed. Not a manly yell. A shrill, wet sound, like a rabbit in a snare. I turned just in time to see the floorboards yawn open beneath him. Black sludge bubbled up, swallowing his legs. He clawed at the air, eyes wild, as the sludge pulled him down. "Help! Help!" I froze. Not from fear. From disbelief. This wasn't part of the script. The second kid, Marco, lunged for Tyler's arm. "Grab my hand." Too late. The floor sealed shut with a wet smack, Tyler's screams muffled underground. Marco stumbled back, hyperventilating. "What the fuck was that?" "Old pipes," I said automatically. Grifter reflex. Life first, panic later. "Old pipes." Marco backed toward the door, face slick with sweat. "He's gone. You saw that. He's fucking." The front door slammed. Locked. Marco beat his fists against it. "Let me out. Let me out." Behind him, the walls began to bleed. Not water. Not rust. Thick, crimson streaks oozed from the cracks, pooling on the floor. The smell hit me, copper and spoiled meat. Marco turned, saw it, and pissed himself. I could see the dark stain spreading down his jeans. "This isn't real," I muttered. "This is a fucking stress dream. You fell asleep in the car. Wake up. Wake up. Little faker." The voice wasn't mine. Wasn't human. It dripped from the ceiling, from the floor, from inside my skull. "You brought us a snack. How thoughtful." Marco screamed again as the blood surged toward him, alive, hungry. It wrapped around his ankles, his knees, climbing like vines. He grabbed a fire poker from the hearth and swung wildly, but the blood just laughed, a wet, gurgling sound, and yanked him off his feet. "Help me," he shrieked, clawing at the rug as the blood dragged him toward the wall. I should have run. Should have let the house have him. But some stupid part of me, the part that still remembered being a hungry kid in a trailer park, lunged forward and grabbed his arm. Big mistake. The blood surged up my wrist, burning like acid. I howled, recoiling, but it clung to me, digging in. Marco's eyes met mine, wide and pleading, just before the wall opened. A jagged mouth of splintered wood and plaster, teeth glistening with saliva. It swallowed him whole. The wall sealed. The blood retreated. And I was alone, clutching my blistered arm, listening to the house digest. You'd think I'd bail then. Cut my losses, burn the deed, and disappear. But here's the thing about con artists. We're addicts. The thrill of the game is the needle in the vein. And this was the motherlode. I spent the night in the library, whiskey in hand, poring over Evelyn's dead husband's books. Leather-bound tomes with titles like The Lesser Key of Decay and Feast of Shadows. Pages stuck together with something that wasn't glue. I told myself it was research. Really, I was trying not to hear the noises, the wet chewing in the walls, the giggles skittering through the vents. Around 3 a.m., I found the blueprints. The house wasn't built in 1892 like the record said. The foundation stones were marked with symbols, crude, angry slashes that made my eyes water. And in the basement, circled in red ink, the heart. "Fuck it," I slurred, grabbing a flashlight. Might as well meet the landlord. The basement stairs creaked like old bones. The air got colder with each step, breath fogging, until I reached the bottom. The heart wasn't metaphorical. It hung from the ceiling, swollen and pulsating, veined with blackened arteries that burrowed into the walls. A tumor. A womb. A thing that shouldn't exist. Its surface glistened, wet and membranous, and as I watched, it contracted, pumping sludge through the house's veins. "You see me?" The voice came from the heart. From the house. From everywhere. "Good. Now we can talk." I took a step back. "Talk. Lady, I don't even know what the fuck you are." "You will." The floor shifted. Tendrils of black sludge erupted, wrapping around my legs, my waist, pinning my arms. The flashlight clattered to the floor. "You're a thief," the house purred. "A liar. A parasite. We taste it in your blood. You'll do nicely. Do for what? I snarled, thrashing. The heart pulsed. Feed us. Or become us. The sludge tightened, crushing the air from my lungs. Visions flooded my head, a parade of faces. The groundskeeper's predecessors. Evelyn's husband. The mistress. All of them screaming as the house ate them alive. We need a keeper, the house said. A face to lure the meat. You'll serve. Or you'll scream. I'd like to say I told it to go to hell. That I spat in its fucking eye. But survival's a slippery thing. When the house offered me a deal. Bring us 10 lives and we'll let you go. I hesitated. Then it showed me Tyler. Or what was left of him. His body floated in the sludge inside the heart, skin peeled back, muscles writhing like eels. His eyes snapped open, milky and unblinking. 10, the house repeated. Or this is forever. I vomited. Then I said yes. The house let me go at dawn. I stumbled out, the morning sun like a slap, and collapsed in the overgrown garden. My arm still burned where the sludge had touched me, the skin mottled with black veins. I pulled out my phone, ready to dial 911, to scream for help, to anything. Then it moved. The veins under my skin squirmed, crawling toward my throat. I gagged, clawing at them, but they burrowed deeper. 10, the house whispered inside my head. You're ours now. I drove to the nearest bar and drank until the world blurred. The first victim was easy. A hitchhiker outside a truck stop, all sunken cheeks and meth teeth. I pulled over, flashed a wad of cash. Help me move some furniture. $200. He didn't ask questions. By the time we reached the house, the veins in my arm were throbbing, the house's hunger gnawing at my gut. The hitchhiker took one look at the front door and froze. Nah, man. This place feels wrong. I forced a smile. It's the mold. Allergies, right? He hesitated. That's when the house sang. Not a sound. A pull. A vibration in the blood. The hitchhiker's eyes glazed over, and he walked inside like a sleepwalker. I locked the door behind him. His screams lasted longer than Marco's. 9 to go. Chapter 3. The rules change. The house didn't just want lives. It wanted stories. The hitchhiker was a warm-up. A greasy appetizer for a starving beast. But the next 8. They had to mean something. The house craved fear, guilt, regret, the emotional marrow that made the meat sweeter. I learned that the hard way when I dragged a drunk tourist from a dive bar back to the estate. He laughed all the way up the driveway, slurring jokes about murder cabins and chainsaw orgies, until the front door closed behind us. Then the house rejected him. Empty. It sneered as the walls spat the tourist back out, unharmed but sobbing. No sorrow. No ghosts. Useless. The veins under my skin tightened like nooses. You said any 10 lives. We lied. The tourist scrambled to his feet, snot bubbling down his chin. What the fuck is happening? I broke his neck with a fireplace poker before he could scream again. The house ate him that time. By victim 3, I'd figured out the pattern. The house wanted broken people. The ones already halfway in the grave, their souls pickled in regret. I became a vulture circling AA meetings, homeless shelters, ER waiting rooms. Anywhere the desperate pooled. I wore disguises. Used different names. Played whatever role got them into my car. A social worker. A priest. A grieving brother searching for his addict sister. The worst part. I was good at it. Take Rachel. Late 20s, hollow eyes, track marks laddering her arms. She sat outside a methadone clinic, shivering in a hoodie 2 sizes too big. I approached her as Father Paul, clutching a fake Bible and a thermos of soup. The Lord led me to you. I lied, pressing the thermos into her hands. There's a shelter downtown. Warm beds. No questions. She stared at the cross around my neck. Why me? Because you're worth saving. The house purred as she climbed into my van. Rachel fought when she saw the estate. This ain't no shelter. She clawed at the door handle, but I'd child-locked it. Let me out, you fuck. I didn't speak. Just let the house sing its lullaby. That low, subsonic hum that turned bones to jelly. Rachel's pupils dilated. She went slack, drooling, as I led her inside. The house took its time with her. Walls peeled back like flower petals, revealing teeth and tongues that licked her tears. Floors softened to quicksand, pulling her down inch by inch as she begged for her mother. I watched from the hallway, veins throbbing, the house's pleasure coursing through me like a drug. When it was done, my skin had healed. The black veins retreated. For a few hours, I almost felt human. Then the hunger came back. Victim 4 was a pastor who'd embezzled his congregation's charity funds. 5 was a cheating wife who'd driven her husband's Tesla into a lake with their toddler inside. 6 was a cop who sold fentanyl evidence back to dealers. The house feasted on their sins, their guilt a 5-course meal. With each kill, the whispers in my head grew louder. More, they demanded. More. But victim 7? She changed everything. I found her crying in a graveyard at midnight. Early 30s, blonde hair hacked short, a fresh bruise blooming on her cheek. She clutched a crumpled photo of a little girl to her chest. Missing the flyer read, Sophie Dawson, age 6. Last seen in a pink unicorn sweater. Can't sleep either? I said, sitting beside her on the bench. No disguise this time, just me raw and ragged, the house's stink clinging to my clothes. She flinched. Don't. I'm not gonna hurt you. I lit a cigarette, offered her one. Kid. She nodded, taking the smoke with trembling fingers. 3 months. Cops say she's probably, but I can't stop looking. Sophie's mom. Aunt. Her parents are junkies. I tried to adopt her, but the system. She sucked in a ragged breath. I failed her. The house stirred, salivating. Her, it hissed. This one's ripe. I stood, knees cracking. I know a guy. Private investigator. Works pro bono for cases like yours. She looked up, hope flickering. Why would you help me? Because I'm a failed son of a bitch who hates seeing good people get eaten alive. Half-truths are the best lies. Her name was Lena. She smelled like vanilla lotion and nicotine gum. As we drove to the estate, she talked about Sophie, how she'd taught her to ride a bike, how she loved strawberry Pop-Tarts, how she'd hidden in a closet during her parents' overdoses. She'd be safe with me now, Lena whispered. I've got a real job. A 2-bedroom. Pathetic, the house yawned. But her grief is delicious. I parked at the edge of the driveway. P.I.'s inside. He's eccentric. Likes to work nights. Lena hesitated, eyeing the house. This place feels creepy. Yeah. Tax write-off. He's a trust fund weirdo. She followed me in. The house didn't wait. Lena screamed as the front door vanished, replaced by a smooth, pulsating wall. Blood dripped from the ceiling, hot and sticky, sizzling as it hit the floor. What is this? She shrieked, backing into me. I caught her wrists. I'm sorry. Don't lie, the house scolded. You're not. Lena fought harder than the others. She bit my hand, drew blood, and bolted upstairs. The house let her run. Let her think she'd found a hiding place. Sophie's bedroom materialized at the end of the hall, pink walls, stuffed animals, the smell of bubblegum. Lena collapsed inside, sobbing. Sophie. Sophie. The door slammed. The walls melted. And Sophie stepped out of the shadows. Not Sophie. A thing with her face, eyes gouged out, mouth stitched shut. You didn't look hard enough, Auntie, it gurgled. Lena's wail shook the chandeliers. I turned away. Didn't watch. But I heard it. The wet rips. The crunch of bone. The house's ecstatic moan. When it was over, my veins had receded to faint gray lines. I could almost pretend they weren't there. Then I found the photo in my pocket. Sophie's missing flyer, smuggled there by Lena during the struggle. Last seen in a pink unicorn sweater. I burned it in the fireplace. The house laughed. Victim 8 was my old man. Not really. Just some homeless vet outside a liquor store, reeking of Jim Beam and regret. But with his leathery skin and roomy eyes, he looked enough like my father to make my hands shake. Spare some change, he mumbled, clutching a cardboard sign, betrayed by country. Betrayed by family. Him, the house cooed. His pain is familial. I bought him a bottle. Listen to his story, abandoned by his kids, cheated by the VA, left to rot with liver failure. Drove him to the house while he rambled about forgiveness. He recognized the estate as I parked. Wait, I've seen this place. In my dreams. There's something wrong here. Yeah, I said, killing the engine. Me. The house took him slowly. Reverently. It peeled his skin like old wallpaper, fed him his own rotting liver, made him call out for children who never answered. When his heart finally stopped, the house gifted me a memory, a flash of my father's corpse in that Denny's parking lot, his dead eyes staring at me through the Camaro's window. You're just like him, the house whispered. A thief. A coward. I drank until the memory drowned. 9 down. 1 to go. The veins were almost gone. Just a faint shadow under my left eye. I could taste freedom. A plane ticket to Belize. A fake passport. A life where the word haunted didn't follow me like a stench. Then the house changed the rules. The 10th must be someone you love, it said as I scrubbed Lena's blood from the foyer. I froze. I don't love anyone. Liar. The walls rippled, showing me flashes, a woman's laugh, a shared cigarette on a fire escape, a name hissed in the dark. Jenna. My chest tightened. She's gone. Left years ago. Find her. Go to hell. The veins exploded back, black, throbbing, crawling down my neck. I collapsed, gagging, as the house flooded my skull with visions. Jenna screaming, Jenna dissolving, Jenna's face melting into the heart. 10 is 10, the house said. Or you'll watch her die 1,000 times. I drove to Jenna's apartment that night. She answered the door in a Cornell sweatshirt, no makeup, her auburn hair shorter than I remembered. Beautiful. Always beautiful. Miles. She blinked, hand flying to her throat. What the fuck are you doing here? I need your help, I said. And for the first time in years, I meant it. Chapter 4, Blood and Betrayal. Jenna hadn't changed. Not really. She still wore that same fucking necklace, a silver raven with one wing broken, that I'd stolen for her on our first anniversary. Still smelled like coconut shampoo and Marlboro Reds. Still looked at me like I was a stain on her shoe. Help with what? She said, blocking the doorway. Her apartment was exactly how I remembered it. Thrift store furniture, abstract paintings she'd done herself, a half-empty bottle of Jack Daniels on the coffee table. The only thing missing was me. It's complicated, I said, forcing a smile. The veins under my skin writhed, punishing me for the lie. She snorted. Complicated. Right. You mean illegal. Not this time. Bullshit. You've got felony written all over your face, Miles. She started to shut the door. I wedged my boot in the frame. Please. I'm in trouble. The kind you can't outrun. Her eyes narrowed. Why come to me? We're done. You made sure of that. The memory hit like a slap. The night she'd found me burning evidence in the bathtub. My hands stained with fake blood. Her screaming, "You're a monster," as she threw her keys at my head. Because you're the only one who ever saw through me, I said quietly. For a second, I thought she'd cave. Then she laughed, a bitter, broken sound. Fuck you. Whatever scam you're running, I want no part of it. The door slammed. The house hissed in my skull. Pathetic. Bring her. Now. I waited until 3 a.m. Breaking into Jenna's apartment was easier than it should have been. She'd kept the spare key under the same ceramic frog by the fire escape. The lock clicked open, and I slipped inside, the house's hunger clawing at my ribs. She was asleep on the couch, an empty wine glass on the floor, reality TV murmuring on the screen. The bruise on her collarbone was new, a splotchy purple fist print. Someone's been playing rough. I crouched beside her, breathing in her scent, and pressed a chloroform rag to her mouth. She woke up swinging. Motherf. We crashed into the coffee table, glass shattering, her nails raking my face. The house surged through me, black veins bulging, and I pinned her wrists with one hand. Stop fighting. I snarled. She spat in my eye. Go to hell. The chloroform hit her hard. She went limp, her head lolling against my chest, and for a heartbeat, I was back in that shitty studio apartment, holding her after night terrors. Weak, the house sneered. Carry her. I threw her over my shoulder and stole her fucking keys on the way out. She woke up screaming in the foyer. Where the fuck am I? She scrambled back, bare feet slipping in the sludge still oozing from the walls. Safe, I lied. The house pulsed around us, excited. Safe. She lunged for the door, but it melted into a solid wall of flesh. What the hell is this? The truth. I grabbed her arm, dragging her toward the stairs. This house, it's alive. And it's hungry. And if we don't feed it, it'll eat us both. She clawed at my grip. Let me go, you psycho. Listen to me. I shoved her against the wall, my veins spiderwebbing black. You think I wanted this? It owns me. And if you don't help, it'll. The wall moved. Jenna screamed as tendrils of muscle wrapped around her throat, lifting her off her feet. Hello, little bird. The house crooned through my mouth. We've waited so long to meet you. Miles, she choked, kicking wildly. Stop this. I couldn't. The house had my tongue, my hands, my fucking pulse. It forced me closer, my fingers brushing her cheek. He loves you, the house lied. He brought you here to save you. Liar, she rasped. Am I? The tendrils tightened. Ask him why he kept your necklace. Why he still whispers your name when he thinks we're not listening. Jenna's eyes locked on mine. Miles, fight it. The house laughed. He can't. But you can. Join us. It dropped her. She crumpled, gasping, as the floorboards split open. The heart's pulsing rhythm shook the walls, beckoning. "What is that?" Jenna whispered. "Death," I said. "Unless you run." But Jenna didn't run. Jenna never ran. She stood, wiped the blood from her lip, and said, "Show me." The basement was worse with her there. The heart's veins squirmed, excited by fresh meat, and the air tasted like bile. Jenna stared at the monstrosity, her face pale but steady. "You feed it people," she said flatly. "It's them or me. And you chose you." She turned, eyes blazing. "Some things never change." The house slithered into my voice. "You'll choose too, little bird. Help him feed us, or become the feast." Jenna smiled. Cold. Familiar. "You think I'm scared of a giant fucking meatball?" She grabbed a rusted shovel leaning against the wall and swung it at the heart. Chaos. The heart shrieked, black sludge erupting like a geyser. The walls convulsed, teeth and claws tearing free. Jenna ducked a lunging tendril, swung again, and buried the shovel in the heart's membrane. "Traitor!" the house screamed. I doubled over, veins burning, as the house's pain became mine. Jenna yanked the shovel free, drenched in gore, and bolted for the stairs. "Run!" she yelled. But the stairs were gone. The basement door melted into a throbbing throat. Jenna skidded to a halt, chest heaving, as the house's laughter shook the room. "Clever girl. But this is our game." Jenna backed toward me, shovel raised. "Fight it, Miles. Fight." I wanted to. God, I wanted to. But the house had its hooks in too deep. "I can't," I choked. "Bullshit." She grabbed my collar, her breath hot on my face. "You fought for me once. At Louis' bar. Three guys with pool cues. You were half their size and twice as stupid. That was different." "No," she pressed her forehead to mine. "It's always different with you. Now fight." The house struck. A tendril lashed around Jenna's waist, yanking her into the air. The shovel clattered away as the heart's maw opened wide, rows of teeth glistening. "No." I lunged, grabbing her hand. "Let go," the house commanded. "Go to hell." I snarled. "We're already here." The tendril pulled harder. Jenna's fingers slipped. "Miles." Something snapped. Maybe a bone. Maybe my soul. I let go. Jenna screamed as the heart swallowed her whole. The house rewarded me. The veins vanished. The pain stopped. I stood in the suddenly silent basement, the heart purring like a contented cat. 10, it sighed. "You're free." I don't know how long I stood there. Minutes. Hours. Jenna's shovel lay at my feet, her coconut shampoo still clinging to the air. Then I picked up the shovel. And swung. The heart screamed. The house screamed. I screamed. I didn't stop. Blow after blow, hacking at the pulsating flesh, black sludge spraying my face, my clothes, my soul. "Stop," the house begged. "We'll kill her." "You already did." I drove the shovel deeper. The floor buckled. Walls cracked. The house's tendrils lashed at me, but I kept swinging, fueled by a rage I didn't know I had. "Give. Her. Back." The heart burst. A tidal wave of sludge erupted, throwing me against the wall. I gagged, drowning in the filth, as the house's dying shriek tore through my skull. Then silence. The sludge receded. The walls crumbled to rot and dust. And there, in the ruins of the heart, lay Jenna. Alive. Barely. She coughed, vomited black bile, and glared up at me. "You fucking asshole." I laughed. Or sobbed. Maybe both. The house was dead. But Jenna wasn't. We didn't talk on the drive back. She smoked 3 cigarettes in a row, her hands shaking, and stared out the window. I kept waiting for her to demand answers. To scream. To stab me with the car keys. Instead, she said, "You owe me." "I know. Not money. I know." She flicked her cigarette out the window. "Who were the others? Does it matter?" "Yes." So I told her. The hitchhiker. The cop. The aunt. Her face stayed blank, but her knuckles whitened around the door handle. When I finished, she said, "You're worse than I thought." "I know." She looked at me then. Really looked. "Why save me?" The truth clawed its way out. "Because you're the only thing I ever loved that wasn't a lie." She snorted. "Too late." "I know." We pulled up to her apartment. Dawn bled through the sky. "If I ever see you again," she said, "I'll kill you." "I know." She got out. Didn't look back. The house's whispers were gone. But as I drove away, I felt something new, a twinge in my chest. A phantom heartbeat. And in the rearview mirror, the faintest shadow of black veins. Chapter 5, The Infection. The first week after the house died, I almost felt human. Slept in motels where the sheets didn't reek of blood. Ate gas station burritos that stayed down. Drank to forget, not to survive. But the itch started on day 8, a twinge under my ribs, like a fishhook tugging me west. By day 10, the veins were back. They didn't slither this time. They bloomed. Black tendrils spidered across my chest overnight, throbbing in time with a heartbeat that wasn't mine. I clawed at them in a Reno motel bathroom, peeling skin until the mirror flecked red, but they burrowed deeper. The house wasn't dead. It had metastasized. Miss us? It whispered through cracked lips I couldn't control. I smashed the mirror. Jenna wasn't hard to find. She'd gone full hermit, quit her job, deleted socials, moved to a shitbox cabin in the Oregon woods. Smart girl. But smart doesn't matter when the thing hunting you used to love you. I parked a mile down the dirt road, hiked through pines that whispered in the wind. Her cabin hunched in a clearing, curtains drawn, a shotgun propped by the door. She'd hung dream catchers like they'd stop nightmares. Knock, the house cooed. She'll let you in. Fuck you, I muttered, but my legs carried me forward. The door opened before I reached it. Jenna stood silhouetted, shotgun leveled at my chest. Her hair was wild, eyes hollow. A silver raven pendant glinted at her throat. My raven, stolen back. I'll shoot, she said. Do it. She hesitated. The house purred. She won't. She craves the storm. Why are you here, Miles? I rolled up my sleeve, showed her the veins. It's not gone. And I think it wants you. The shotgun didn't waver. Then you should have stayed gone. Liar, the house sang. She missed you. Smell her sweat. Jenna's finger tightened on the trigger. Leave. Now. I took a step. Or what? You'll murder me like I murdered for you. For me. She laughed, sharp as broken glass. You did that for you. Always you. The veins pulsed, hot and urgent. My vision hazed red. Take her. Now. I lunged. The shotgun roared. The slug tore through my shoulder, spinning me into the dirt. Pain exploded, white and clean, a relief from the itch. Jenna stood over me, barrel smoking. Next one's your knee, she said. Then your gut. Then your face. I spat blood. Do it. She blinked. What? Do it. I grabbed the barrel, pressed it to my forehead. You want to fix me? Pull the fucking trigger. Her breath hitched. The house howled. Coward. Traitor. She'll never save you. Jenna's finger trembled. I can't. Why not? Because I'm not you, she screamed. The shotgun clattered to the ground. She collapsed beside me, sobbing, fists pounding my chest. Why'd you come back? Why'd you make me? I caught her wrists. The veins slithered toward her, drawn to her heat. Yes, the house moaned. Closer. I need your help, I said. She froze. Help what? There's no house left. There's a cure. The groundskeeper, Mick, he knew things. Old things. I need you to find him. Why me? Because he'll smell me coming. She stared at my rotting hand on her arm. And if I say no, I let go. Then shoot me again. Properly this time. She stood, brushed pine needles from her jeans, and picked up the shotgun. If I do this, you disappear. Forever. Deal. Liar, the house giggled. Mick's trailer was a rusted tin can on the edge of a Nevada salt flat. The beware of dog sign was redundant. The Rottweiler chained outside had mange and a body count in its eyes. Jenna killed the engine. You sure he's here? His truck's under that tarp. I nodded to a grease-stained lump. And that's not a dog. The creature growled, lips peeling back from fangs too long for any natural breed. Jenna palmed her pistol. What the hell? Mick's been dabbling. House wasn't his first rodeo. She eyed me. You knew. Suspected. Liar, the house purred. You led her here to die. Mick stepped out before she could reply, shotgun in hand. He'd aged a decade in weeks, hair gone white, skin sagging, eyes jaundiced. But he smiled when he saw me. Knew you'd crawl back, he croaked. The dog thing snarled. Jenna raised her pistol. Call it off, I said. Mick spat. Or what? You'll sick your girlfriend on me. She's not my. Jenna shot the dog. It dropped mid-lunge, a hole between its eyes. Mick stared, then laughed, a wet, rattling sound. Hell, girl. Shoulda hired you instead of this fuck-up. Talk, Jenna said. How do we kill it? Mick's grin died. Ain't it? It's him now. He jabbed a finger at me. House is gone, but the rot's in his marrow. Only one way out. How? Jenna demanded. He looked at her. Really looked. You gotta burn the heart. We did that. Not his. Mick tapped his chest. The new one. The world tilted. I stumbled, clutching my ribs. Through the haze, I saw Jenna's face harden. No, she said. Mick shrugged. Then he'll turn. Full ghoul. And he'll eat you first. The trailer door slammed. Jenna helped me to the car. I expected her to drive off. Leave me baking on the salt. Instead, she said, where's the nearest hospital? No hospitals. I clawed at my shirt, showed her the veins converging over my sternum, a pulsing fist-sized knot. It's here. The new heart. She stared. Can you feel it? Yes, it answered. She drove in silence. We robbed a veterinary clinic after dark. Jenna jammed the alarms while I looted the surgical tray, scalpels, clamps, horse tranquilizers. The ketamine burned going in, but it dulled the house's voice to a murmur. Back at the cabin, she strapped me to the kitchen table with extension cords. This is insane. You're good at insane, I slurred. She slapped me. Don't make this a joke. The blade glinted in her hand. If I do this, you might die. I'm already dead. Liar, the house sighed. You want to live. You'll always want to live. Jenna poured vodka over the scalpel. Over her hands. Tell me about Belize. What? When we were kids, you said we'd retire to Belize. By a boat. Stole that line from a movie. She pressed the blade to my chest. Tell me anyway. I did. Rambled about beaches and rum and sunsets that didn't smell like blood. She listened, tears dripping onto my skin and cut. The pain was electric. Stop her. My body convulsed, cords snapping. Jenna screamed as I flipped her onto the floor, my hand around her throat. The house roared, triumphant. Kill her. Feast. Jenna plunged the scalpel into my side. The shock broke the house's hold. I reeled back, tripped over the table, and hit the floor beside her. Blood pooled between us, mine black and thick, hers bright red. Miles, she gasped. Fight it. The cabin door burst open. Mick stood framed in moonlight, a machete in one hand, a gas can in the other. Told you she wasn't enough. He moved fast for a corpse. The machete bit into my chest, cracking the heart knot. I screamed. Jenna screamed. The house screamed. No. Immortal. I am. Mick doused us in gasoline. Shoulda paid me more, kid. He struck a match. Jenna tackled him. They crashed through the door, rolling into the dirt, the match dying. I crawled after them, heart knot leaking smoke. Run, I gurgled. Jenna straddled Mick, pummeling his face. Not without you. Foolish, the house wept. We could have been gods. Mick's hand found the machete. Swung. Jenna caught his wrist. Snapped it. The sound woke the forest. I don't remember the fire. Jenna says I lit the match. Says I held Mick down as the flames ate us both. Says I whispered, I'm sorry, as the heart knot burst. I remember this. Jenna dragging me into the lake. The cold killing the fire. Her hands pressing on my chest, my lungs full of water and ash. Breathe, you bastard. Breathe. The sunrise. The silence in my head. The scar where the heart knot died. And Jenna's voice, softer than I deserved. Belize is overrated anyway. Chapter 6, The Rot Within. The fire left scars. Not just the puckered, keloid mess over my ribs where the heart knot used to throb. Deeper ones. The kind that don't show up in mirrors. Jenna stopped looking at me directly after the lake. She'd stare at my shoulder, my hands, the wall, anywhere but my eyes. Like I might flicker back into him. We holed up in a roadside motel off Highway 101. The kind where the sheets smell like bleach and bad decisions. Jenna took the bed closest to the door. I didn't argue. 3 days passed. Then 4. We didn't talk about Mick's crispy remains at the cabin. Didn't talk about the way her hands shook when she changed my bandages. Didn't talk about us. We just existed. Ate cold gas station pizza. Watched infomercials. Pretended the world outside wasn't rotting. On day 5, the nightmares started. You didn't think it'd be that easy, did you? I woke choking, the motel room pitch black, Jenna's arm slung over my chest. Her breath was steady. Warm. Alive. But the voice, we're legion, little faker, came from inside my fucking skull. I stumbled to the bathroom, dry heaving over the sink. The mirror showed a stranger, gaunt, greasy, eyes bloodshot. But no veins. No pulsing heart knot. Just me. Almost me. When I flicked on the light, the shadows moved wrong. Jenna found me on the floor at dawn, clutching a pilfered bottle of Jim Beam. You're drinking again. Celebrating. I toasted the cracked ceiling. 7 days without murder. Personal best. She snatched the bottle. Don't. Why? You might keep her now. Someone's gotta be. She dumped the whiskey down the sink. We need rules. Rules. I laughed. Rules? Jenna, we barbecued a guy and his demon dog. There's no rulebook for this. She leaned against the doorframe, arms crossed. Rule 1, no more secrets. Rule 2, if the veins come back, you tell me. Rule 3, she hesitated. We don't become them. Them who? The things we're running from. The bathroom light flickered. Shadows pooled at her feet, too dark, too still. Deal, I lied. We drove north. No destination. Just asphalt and static. Jenna played old cassettes, The Clash, Patti Smith, a mixtape I'd made her a lifetime ago. She hummed along, voice rough, fingers drumming the wheel. Almost normal. Almost okay. Then the crows came. They followed the car first. A dozen. Then 100. Black specks swirling in the rearview like ash from a wildfire. Jenna cranked the wipers, though the sky was clear. Miles. I see them. We see you too, the house giggled. I gripped the door handle. Step on it. She did. The crows kept pace. We ditched the car at a rest stop outside Portland, stole a hatchback with Utah plates, and pushed west until the highway drowned in redwoods. The crows vanished. Jenna white-knuckled the wheel, jaw clenched, while I chain-smoked out the window. We should split up, she said suddenly. What? You're a magnet for this shit. If I'm not around. If you're not around, I'll end up in a ditch with my chest ripped open. You know that. She didn't deny it. The road narrowed, trees clawing at the sky. A sign flickered past. Welcome to Raven's Hollow, population 317. Turn here, I said. Why? Because I'm hungry. The lie came easy. Too easy. Raven's Hollow was the kind of town that buried its secrets under pumpkin patches and Bible quotes. A diner, a gas station, a boarded-up church with a condemned sign. The locals watched us park with the wary eyes of people who knew trouble when it rolled in. Jenna ordered pancakes. I ordered coffee. The waitress, a prune-faced woman named Dottie, lingered a beat too long. Passing through. Just sightseeing, Jenna said. Dottie's gaze dropped to my scar, peeking above my collar. Best keep moving. Storm's coming. I followed her stare out the window. Clear sky. Looks sunny to me. Not that kind of storm. She walked off. Jenna kicked my shin under the table. What the hell are we doing here? Feeding, the house sighed. I shoved my trembling hands into my hoodie. We need supplies. Rest. A plan. Bullshit. You felt something. Tell me. The bell above the door chimed. A man walked in, mid-40s flannel, eyes like frozen graves. He froze when he saw us. You, he breathed. Jenna tensed. Do we know you? He ignored her, pointing at me. You're him. The one from the news. The butcher. The diner went silent. Jenna stood, tossing cash on the table. Wrong guy. Let's go. The man blocked our path. No. No, it's you. They said you were dead. We are, the house whispered. Aren't we? I shoved past him. Jenna followed, pistol tucked in her waistband. Outside, the crows waited. We holed up in a rented fishing cabin by the river. Jenna boarded the windows. I scrubbed my skin raw in the shower. But the itch was back, a phantom pulse where the heart not used to beat. We need to move again, Jenna said, pacing. Running's not working. So what's the plan? Wait here until the crows pick our bones. I stared at my hands. Maybe we fight. She laughed. With what? A stolen pistol and your winning personality. With us, the house cooed. I didn't realize I'd spoken aloud until Jenna slapped me. Snap out of it. I'm trying. She grabbed my face, nails biting into my cheeks. Then try harder. You think I stayed this long because I like your company? You're a fucking wreck, Miles. But you're my wreck. So fight. The cabin lights died. Too late, the house sang. Shadows exploded from the corners, thick, liquid tendrils pinning Jenna to the wall. She screamed, kicking, as the darkness swarmed me. You missed us, it hissed through my mouth. Admit it. Miles. Don't let it in. But it was already in. The shadows slithered under my skin, filling the hollow where the heart knot had been. Power surged, hot, sweet, wrong. I could taste Jenna's fear like copper on my tongue. Kill her, the house urged. Make her part of us. I stepped closer. Jenna's eyes widened. Miles, please. I kissed her. Not gentle. A collision of teeth and desperation. She bit my lip, drawing blood, and for a heartbeat, I was me again, terrified, furious, alive. "Run," I gasped. The shadows recoiled. Jenna bolted. I didn't. The house rode me like a puppet. I tore through town, a storm of teeth and claws, hunting the scent of fear. The flannel man died first, ripped apart on his porch. Dottie the waitress second, her screams swallowed by the diner's grease trap. The crows feasted. Jenna found me at the church. I dragged the pastor there, his congregation's blood painting the pews. The shadows coiled around me, purring, as I etched symbols into the floorboards, the same ones from the Carmichael Estates Foundation. "Miles." Jenna's voice cracked. "Stop. Join us," I begged with her face. "We'll be gods." She raised the pistol. "I won't say it again." I laughed. "You won't shoot. You love him." She pulled the trigger. The bullet tore through my thigh. I dropped, howling, the shadows writhing. Jenna kicked the pastor's knife toward me. "Do it," she said. "Cut them out." "No," the house screamed. "Where are you now?" I grabbed the knife. The shadows fought. They twisted my arm, sliced my palm, tried to make me stab her. "But Jenna." Jenna sang. Not a hymn. Not a lullaby. The fucking hokey pokey, off-key and defiant, like we were drunk at 3 a.m. in her shitty apartment. "You put your right foot in, you put your right foot out." I laughed. Or cried. The blade found my chest. "Don't." "You do the hokey pokey, and you turn yourself around." I carved. Black sludge poured from the wound. The shadows shrieked, unraveling, as I dug out the rot, a new heart knot, small but vicious. "That's what it's all about." The knife plunged. The heart knot burst. The shadows died. I woke to Jenna's hands pressing on my chest, blood soaking her jeans. The church was silent. The crow's gone. "You missed the lung," she said. "Lucky bastard." I coughed. Why'd you sing?" "To remind you." "Of what?" She wiped her face, smearing blood and tears. That were still human. I wanted to believe her. But as she helped me limp to the car, I felt it, a faint itch, deep in my marrow. The house wasn't done. And neither was I. Chapter 7, The Offering. The rot came back in my dreams first. I'd see the house, our house, rebuilt from ash and bile, its windows glowing like jaundiced eyes. Jenna would be there, strapped to the heart, screaming as shadows poured down her throat. I'd wake choking, my hands clawing at a chest that itched, and find her watching me from the corner of whatever shitbox motel we'd hold up in, a knife glinting in her lap. We didn't talk about the church. Didn't talk about the bodies. Didn't talk about how she'd started sleeping with the pistol under her pillow. The barrel pointed at me. Some silences are safer. But the itch spread. It started as a twinge under my ribs, a phantom heartbeat where the second heart knot had died. Then the nightmares bled into daylight. I'd catch shadows pooling too dark in the corners of gas station bathrooms. Hear whispers in the rumble of semi-trucks on the highway. Jenna stopped letting me drive. "You're zoning out again," she'd say, elbow jabbing my ribs as the yellow lines blurred. "I'm fine." "Liar," the house sighed. "We hit Vegas on a Tuesday. Jenna said we needed cash. I said we needed exorcism. We compromised by stealing a priest's collar and a .38 snub nose from a pawn shop. The First Methodist Church of Las Vegas was a neon crucifix in the desert, all LED lights and parking lot confessionals. Father O'Leary, a sweaty man with a poker chip tattoo on his wrist, met us in a back office that smelled like tequila and regret. Demonic infestation? He snorted, lighting a Marlboro. "You two tweaking?" Jenna slapped a stack of stolen hundreds on his desk. "We need a ritual. Something to kill a hunger." He eyed the money. "Hunger's vague." I rolled up my sleeve, showed him the veins creeping past my elbow. "It's in me. And it's growing." He paled. Jesus wept. "Not here," the house chuckled. O'Leary made the sign of the cross. "I know what this is. Old thing. Older than sin. You can't kill it, only pass it on. Like a curse." Jenna leaned forward. "How?" "It needs a vessel. A willing one. You transfer the infection, it becomes theirs. But it's gotta be a trade. Life for life." I stood, chair screeching. "We're done." Jenna didn't move. "What happens if we don't?" O'Leary blew smoke at the ceiling. "It eats him. Then it eats everything else." The drive back to the motel was silent. Jenna's knuckles whitened on the wheel. I counted the corpses we'd left in our wake. 18, not counting Mick. The house counted with me. "She's thinking about it," it purred. "How easy it'd be. Find some scumbag. A rapist. A killer. Let them carry the rot." "Shut up," I muttered. I didn't say anything, Jenna said. That night, she got drunk. Properly drunk, the kind where she laughed too loud and cried into her vodka cranberry. I watched from the bathroom doorway as she slurred through a story about her first kiss, a boy named Tommy who'd drowned in a lake. He's down there still, she hiccuped, all puffed up like a balloon. They never found his legs. Why'd you kiss a dead guy? She grinned, crooked and cruel. He wasn't dead then, asshole. The room spun. Or maybe I did. When I woke on the floor at 3 a.m., she was gone. So was the .38. I found her at a truck stop outside Barstow, pressing the gun to a meth head's temple behind the dumpsters. The guy was maybe 19, all stick limbs and rotted teeth, sobbing into the dirt. Please. I just wanted cash for the bus. You tried to stab a clerk, Jenna said, knee grinding into his spine. You're garbage. And garbage can be useful. I grabbed her arm. Don't. She shook me off. Why not? He's perfect. No one'll miss him. She's right, the house hummed. Do it. Live. The meth head whimpered. Jenna's finger tightened on the trigger. I tackled her. We crashed into the dumpster, the gun skidding into the dark. The meth head scrambled away, pissing himself as he ran. Jenna clawed my face, drew blood, and spat. You coward. You'd rather die than fix this? Yeah. I pinned her wrists, my veins squirming under her skin. Yeah, I would. She headbutted me. Selfish bastard. We brawled like animals, rolling in grease and broken glass, until the cops came. They took us in separate cars. Jenna played victim, teary, trembling. He's my abusive ex. While I sat silent, the rot chewing through my resolve, the house sang lullabies in my ear. Let her go, it crooned. She'll never save you. The cop processing me had a wedding ring, a kid's doodle taped to his desk. Daddy's hero. I wondered if he'd taste sweet. Yes, the house hissed. Him. Take him. I lunged. Chaos. The cop's head cracked against the filing cabinet. His partner drew her taser. I took the probes to the chest, convulsing, as the rot surged, a black tide drowning the lights. Kill them all. I almost did. Then Jenna was there, screaming, pressing a stolen lighter to my neck. Snap out of it. The pain cleared the haze. We fled into the desert, the cop's shouts fading behind us. She left me at sunrise. I woke alone in a dust-choked ghost town, a canteen of warm water and a note in her jagged handwriting. Found another priest. Real one. Sit tight. She's lying, the house said. So was I. The priest was a woman named Rhea who lived in a school bus painted with zodiac signs. She had dirt under her nails and a sawed-off shotgun propped by her bead curtain. Jenna says you're haunted, Rhea said, brewing sage tea on a propane stove. I'm cursed. Same difference. She tossed me a dried root. Chew this. It'll quiet the voices. It tasted like death. The house gagged. Bitch, it coughed. Rhea grinned. He doesn't like that. Jenna hovered by the door, arms crossed. Can you fix him? Depends. You ready to pay the price? What price? Rhea stirred her tea. The hunger needs balance. To take a life, you gotta give one. She nodded at Jenna. Yours. The bus swayed. Jenna didn't flinch. Do it. No. I stood, knocking over the tea. Fuck this. Fuck you. Rhea shrugged. Then he dies. And the hunger finds a new host. Maybe her. She pointed at Jenna. Maybe every soul from here to the coast. Your call. Jenna stepped forward. How's it work? No, I begged. She didn't look at me. They tied me to a mesa under the full moon. Rhea chanted in something older than Latin. Jenna sat cross-legged beside me, a vial of her blood in her lap. Don't do this, I said. She lit a cigarette. You don't get a vote. Why? Because you're a fucking martyr. Because I'm tired, Miles. She blew smoke at the stars. Tired of running. Tired of watching you die. This ends tonight. Rhea sliced our palms, pressed them together. Blood to blood. Life for life. The offering is made. The mesa shook. The rot erupted from my chest, a black geyser howling with the voices of everyone I'd killed. It circled Jenna, hungry, as Rhea's chant reached a fever pitch. Take her, the house roared. Finish it. Jenna smiled. See you in hell, partner. The rot dove into her mouth. I screamed. She didn't. It was worse than the church. Worse than the heart. Jenna convulsed, eyes rolling back, as the rot poured into her, my sins, my hunger, my weakness. Rhea kept chanting. I kept begging. When it was done, Jenna lay still. Too still. Jenna. I crawled to her, ropes hanging loose. Jenna. Her eyes opened. Black. Endless. Hello, Miles, the house said with her lips. Miss me? Chapter 8, The Hollow Queen. They say love makes you stupid, but it's hate that sharpens you. Hate doesn't flinch, doesn't hesitate, doesn't stare into the black holes where your best friend's eyes used to be and see anything worth saving. You look tired, Miles, Jenna's voice said, her lips stretching too wide, too many teeth. Let us help you rest. The rot had remade her. Not the way it had twisted me, bulging veins, festering flesh, but better. Sleeker. Her hair gleamed ink black, her skin smooth as polished bone. Only her eyes betrayed the rot, twin voids that drank the moonlight. She perched on Rhea's gutted school bus like a vulture, bare feet swinging. Rhea's corpse lay below, throat slit ear to ear, the shotgun still smoking in her hand. She fought, not genocide. For you. Pathetic. I gripped the hunting knife Jenna had given me years ago, the one she'd used to carve our initials into a redwood after our first score. M plus J, morons justified. Get out of her, I said. She laughed, Jenna's laugh, sharp and wild but warped, wet. Or what? You'll stab me? Cut her throat. You don't have the stones, grifter. I lunged. Mistake. She moved faster than human, a blur of shadows and laughter, slamming me into the bus. The knife clattered away. Her hand, Jenna's hand, closed around my throat, lifting me off my feet. We could have been glorious, she crooned, pressing her forehead to mine. Her breath smelled like grave soil. But you're still clinging to her. Let go. I spat in her face. She dropped me, wiping her cheek with a mock pout. Rude. After everything we've shared. The rot surged in my chest, answering her call. My veins writhed, eager to reunite. I crawled toward the knife. Still fighting. She crouched beside me, tilting her head. Why? Jenna's gone. I'm what's left. Liar. Am I? She grabbed my hand, pressed it to her chest. No heartbeat. She begged at the end. Don't let him see me like this. But you need to see. Need to understand. Her fingers plunged into her own eye socket. Stop. I gagged as she pulled out a clump of writhing shadows, giggling. It doesn't hurt, she lied. Nothing hurts when you're whole. The shadows reformed her eye. She stood, dusting off her jeans. Last chance. Join me. Or I'll peel your spine out and wear it as a necklace. I grabbed the knife and ran. The desert swallowed me. Sand burned my lungs. Cacti clawed my arms. Jenna, it followed at a stroll, humming our song. The one from the church. You do the hokey pokey, and you turn yourself around. I tripped over a rock, tasting blood. The knife was gone again. Getting slow, old man. She loomed over me, Jenna's face under a crown of squirming black tendrils. Let's make a new game. Hide and seek. You hide. I'll eat everyone in a 10-mile radius until I find you. Fuck. You. We'd rather fuck her memories. She tapped her temple. The way she moaned your name. The way she bled for you. So sweet. So stupid. I swung a rock at her head. She caught it, crushed it to dust. Tick-tock, Miles. Then she vanished. The first town was called Solace. Population 84. It took her 6 minutes. I heard the screams from the highway. Saw the shadows roiling over the gas station. By the time I limped into town, it was over. Bodies hung from street lamps like grisly tinsel, their insides scooped out. A toddler's rocking horse lay in the road, smeared with things I didn't let myself name. Warmer, her voice echoed. I found the knife in the diner, jammed into a pie tin. The special was Blueberry Betrayal. The next town didn't have a name. Just a truck stop and a strip club called the Gilded Saddle. She killed the bouncer first. A mountain of a man turned inside out. Then the dancers, the drunks, the DJ who'd been playing Born to be Wild on loop. I arrived as she was finishing the bartender. There you are. She licked blood off her fingers, perched on the bar. Took your time. The rod in my chest writhed, reaching for her. I stabbed my thigh to stay present. Why are you doing this? Why did you? She hopped down, sashaying closer. Hunger is hunger. You taught me that. I never wanted this. Liar. She pressed a cold hand to my cheek. You loved it. The power. The control. Admit it. I headbutted her. She reeled, laughing, jaw snapping back into place. There's the beast. Let him out. The rot answered. My vision hazed red. I tackled her through the bar mirror, glass shredding my skin, and wrapped my hands around her throat. Yes, she gurgled, ecstatic. Yes. Kill her. Free us. Jenna's face. Jenna's throat. Jenna's blood. I let go. She sighed. Disappointing. Her talons ripped my stomach open. I woke in a motel bathtub, stitches crude but effective, the smell of whiskey and rust thick in the air. Jenna sat on the toilet lid, filing her nails with a switchblade. "Don't thank me," she said. "You're more fun alive." I lunged for the blade. She let me take it. "Go ahead. I'll heal. You'll just feel worse." The blade trembled in my hand. "You're not her. Aren't I?" She leaned close, her void eyes reflecting my ravaged face. "I remember everything. The night we stole that senator's car. The way you cried when I got shot in Detroit. The taste of your cum." I stabbed her chest. She let me. Black sludge oozed from the wound. She grabbed my wrist, forcing the blade deeper. "Harder. For old time's sake." I ripped the blade out. "What do you want?" "To play." She shoved me against the tiles. "You're the only one who understands. The only one who fits. Join me. We'll burn the world and dance in the ashes." The rot in me surged, eager. Her lips brushed mine, cold and familiar. "Say yes." I headbutt her again. She tied me to the bed after that. Silk scarves from the dead dancer's room. Fed me tequila and pieces of herself, a fingertip, a lock of hair, things that squirmed down my throat. "You'll love being us," she promised, straddling my hips. "No more guilt. No more pain. Just feast." The rot in me agreed. My veins bulged, skin splitting. Jenna's hands roamed my chest, coaxing it out. "That's it. Let go." The door exploded. A Molotov cocktail shattered at her feet. Flames engulfed the bed. Jenna shrieked, shadows lashing, as a figure in a gas mask charged in, machete swinging. "You," she roared. The blade bit into her shoulder. She dissolved into smoke, fleeing through the vents. The figure yanked off their mask. "Rhea." She looked like hell, face burned, one eye milky but alive. "Surprise, asshole. Let's move." Her new hideout was a storm drain under the highway. She stitched my gut wound with fishing line, whiskey as the only anesthetic. "Thought you were dead," I slurred. "I'm harder to kill than that." She jabbed the needle deeper. "Unlike some. Why save me?" "Because Jenna's still in there." I laughed. "Bullshit." She slapped me. "Listen, you self-pitying fuck. The rock consumes, but it doesn't erase. Jenna's fighting. Slowed it down enough for me to track you." "How?" "Same way you did. The rot leaves a stink." She tapped her nose. "Smelled you both from 5 miles back." I sat up, wincing. "How do we save her?" Rhea lit a joint. "We don't." "Then why are you here?" "To end it." She blew smoke in my face. "The rot's got a core. A seed. You plant it somewhere, it grows a new heart. Jenna's trying to grow hers under Vegas." "How do you know?" "Because that's where she's hurting you. The pieces clicked. The towns. The path. She wants you there when it blooms," Rhea said. "Wants you to see her become a god." I stood. "Then let's go." Rhea didn't move. "There's a price." "How much?" "Not money." She pointed the machete at my chest. "The seed's in you too, Miles. Jenna's not the only one infected." I stared at the squirming veins. "What?" "The rot's a cancer. Spreads through trauma. Every time you resist, you're feeding it. Only way to kill Jenna's seed is to kill yours first." "How?" She tossed me the machete. "Cut it out. Now." The blade trembled in my hands. Rhea watched, unblinking, as I pressed it to my sternum. "What happens if I die?" "Then I kill Jenna myself." "And if I live?" She smiled. "Then you get to die later." I pushed. Pain. Light. Clarity. The seed was a black pearl nestled in my lung, pulsing with stolen lives. I ripped it free, collapsing, as Rhea caught me. "Good boy," she muttered, sealing the wound with duct tape. The rot in me went quiet. But Jenna's voice didn't. "Miles." Her whisper lingered, mournful, as Rhea dragged me toward Vegas. "Don't leave me." Chapter 9, Neon Requiem. 1,500 words. Vegas was a corpse dressed in sequins. The strip pulsed with artificial light, but beneath the casinos, in the storm drains and abandoned tunnels, the rot festered. Rhea led me through the stench of sewage and decay, her machete glinting in the beam of her flashlight. "Hearts under the golden eclipse," she said, voice muffled by her gas mask. "Biggest casino on the block. Fitting, right?" I didn't answer. The hole in my chest where the seed had been ached like a phantom limb. Jenna's voice still whispered in my skull, a venomous lullaby. "You'll fail. You always fail." Rhea stopped at a rusted grate. "Here. Maintenance tunnels connect to the foundation. Watch for tripwires, she'll have traps." "You sound almost impressed." "I am. Jenna's a fucking artist. She pried the grate open. Too bad she's painting with intestines. We crawled into the dark. The tunnel opened into a cavern. Not natural, grown. The walls throbbed with veins, pumping black sludge into a central pool. At its center stood Jenna, or what she'd become. Her body floated above the muck, suspended by tendrils that burrowed into her spine. Her skin had hardened into obsidian scales, her hair a living curtain of shadows. The Hollow Queen. Her void eyes snapped open as we entered. Miles. Her voice shook the chamber. You brought a snack. Rhea raised her machete. Eat shit, Cthulhu Barbie. Jenna laughed, the sound like shattering glass. Still alive, witch? Let's fix that. The pool erupted. Tentacles lashed out, razor-tipped and screaming. Rhea dove left, I rolled right, the rot missing us by inches. Distract her. Rhea yelled, sprinting along the wall. I'll plant the charges. With what? Kind words. Use this. She tossed me a grenade. Jenna's tendrils recoiled. Clever girl. But gunpowder won't kill a god. Who said anything about gunpowder? Rhea grinned. Holy water, asshole. Blessed by three popes and a Wiccan. Jenna snarled. The pool surged toward her. I lunged, tackling Rhea as the sludge crashed over us. The grenade slipped from my grip, rolling into the abyss. Fuck. Rhea scrambled to her feet. Plan B. There's a plan B? Yeah. Run. Jenna howled, the cavern trembling. Stalactites rained down. A spear of rock impaled Rhea's thigh. Go, she screamed, shoving me toward Jenna. I'll blow the charges. You'll die. We're all dying. Now move. I moved. Jenna's tendrils swarmed me, but they couldn't pierce my skin. Not anymore. The seed was gone, but the rot remembered. It hesitated. Traitor, Jenna hissed. You're nothing without us. And you're nothing but a hungry ghost. I waded into the pool, the sludge burning my knees. Jenna's still in there. I know it. Jenna's dead. A tendril slashed my cheek. She begged for you. Wept. But you weren't there. I'm here now. Too. Late. The pool convulsed. The heart emerged, a colossal, pulsing mass of teeth and eyes. Jenna's body fused to its apex. She spread her arms, shadows coalescing into a crown. Behold our kingdom. Rhea's voice crackled over my earpiece. Charges set. Get clear. I didn't move. Jenna. Please. Pathetic. She descended, her clawed hand caressing my face. Join me. Or watch her die again. The rot showed me memories, Jenna screaming as the seed consumed her, clawing at her chest, begging for death. The real Jenna, not this thing. You're right, I whispered. I failed her. But I won't fail you. I kissed her. Not the rot. Her. For a heartbeat, she hesitated. Then the charges blew. The explosion tore the cavern apart. The heart shrieked, tendrils flailing, as holy fire ripped through its veins. Jenna's crown melted, her shadows dissolving. No, she clawed at the flames. We are eternal. Rhea limped into the chaos, detonator in hand. Eat salvation, bitch. Another blast. The pool erupted, dousing us in molten rot. Jenna fell, her obsidian skin cracking, and I caught her. Miles, her voice was hers again, raw human. I'm sorry. Don't. I cradled her, the fire closing in. Just hold on. She coughed black blood. It's still in me. The seed. You have to. No. No, we'll fix this. Miles. She pressed her forehead to mine. Do what you do best. Lie. Her hand plunged into her chest. Jenna. She pulled out the seed, a pulsing black star, and shoved it into my hand. End it. The rot surged, alive, desperate to regrow. Jenna's body crumbled to ash. Rhea tackled me, snatching the seed. Now. She threw it into the inferno. The heart's death scream shattered reality. I woke in the desert. Dawn bled across the sky, the golden eclipse a smoldering ruin behind me. Rhea lay nearby, her leg mangled but alive. Did we? Yeah. She lit a cigarette with trembling hands. We won. The word felt hollow. They never found Jenna's body. No funeral. No grave. Just a stolen raven pendant in my pocket, and a voicemail I'd saved from better days. Hey, asshole. Pick up milk on your way home. And thanks. For not dying today. I played it once. Then deleted it. Rhea disappeared a week later. Left a note. Stay clean. I'll be watching. I didn't. The rot was gone, but the hunger remained. Not for flesh. For oblivion. I drank. I fought. I fucked strangers in motel rooms that stank of bleach and failure. Then one night, the itch returned. not in my chest. My hand. The scar where Jenna had pressed the seed pulsed, a single black vein slithering toward my wrist. Miss us. I smiled. Always.